Good. No Jumper, coolest podcast in the world. And today we got a man, a living legend in hip hop, a guy who's definitely earned all of his many, many stripes. Tech Nine, how you doing, bro? That's a good way to get started. Man, it's crazy to have you in here. Let me guess that did you find out about the podcast when Hobson came on?
No.
Oh, okay. Because he just recently did it, and we talked about you, and I thought that that might have been.
What did he say?
Just all respect and love, you know.
I'm like his psychiatrist. I need to call him because 2 days ago, fan told me you need to check in with Hobson. He's having a bad time, and I'm like, I usually know, but I've been so busy. So
really,
yeah, I got to call him and see what's wrong.
He seemed like he was in pretty good space when we had our conversation, but I thought it was like really like a better example of like one of my better interviews in the sense that he was just being like really, really honest about like how strange it really is to be in the position that he is with having such a, you know, a different type of fan base and, you know, fans being so fickle and that kind of thing.
Yeah. He's been going through a lot, you know what I'm saying, with Funk Volume and now Undercover Prodigy, you know what I'm saying? I wish him the best, man. I've been following him since The Purge, you know what I'm saying, on his new music, man, Witch Doctor, everything, man. I always push him up, man. He's a good dude.
Yeah, you guys are very similar minded in a lot of ways. You guys have a lot of the same like values or aesthetic choices when it comes to the music.
Hobson is strange, no doubt about it.
He is. He's strange even if he's not strange music.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He was almost strange music,
mm-hmm.
but he started his own, and that's noble.
Crazy. Yeah. Nazi. So you've been in this game for an outlandishly long period of time. You said, what, 1985, you spit your first rap or made your first song?
Yes, I did. That was in seventh grade. You know what I mean? I wrote my first verse. You know what I'm sizzling? I was a beatbox. I used to beatbox.
So all that came first. You had the other elements of hip-hop before
dancing,
you really wanted to rap?
Popping, break dancing, beatboxing, then rap.
Okay. So you were into all that stuff. What was hip hop to you at that time though? What were your influences and what really got you interested in the genre from day one?
From day one, you know what I'm saying, hearing the first Blowfly song, Rap Dirty, you know what I'm saying? That dates all the way back. I think that was before Sugar Hill Gang, you know what I'm saying? That's what I think, you know what I mean?
That's Snoop's earliest like influence. I remember he would always say too.
He said Blowfly?
I think that was like one of his earliest.
Rap Dirty?
When he was young. I don't remember, but I remember going back and checking his stuff out because Snoop told me to.
Yeah. But then from then it was like Roger Troutman and Zap that we would pop to, you know what I'm saying? Michael Jackson was always in there, you know what I'm sizzling? George Clinton, you know. But what really made me want to rap was Ice Cube. DLC, anything NWA, Slick Rick.
You remember when NW came out and what it was like seeing that shift in the rap game?
Oh yes, I remember Eazy-E coming out, man, and it was raunchy.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It was like
people forget.
It was D-Gaff all the way, you know what I'm saying? And we always loved that about NWA and Public Enemy. Made me want to rap in BDP as well, you know what I'm saying? Word to KRS-One. So these people made me want to rap, and if it wasn't for Slick Rick, you know, I would never have that. You know what I'm saying? It was like little toasting styles he was doing. Don't worry about a thing, just make sure nobody sees us. We're rich, we can have whatever, what please. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It was like, it made me want to start flipping, you know what I'm sizzling? And that's when the double time rhyme started and then the triple time. You know, follow me all around the planet, I run the gamut on psychology. They can never manage, we do damage and no apology. Pick them off the panic, a little manic, cause I gotta be friendly, I'm a gem, cause I'm an oddity. You know what I'm saying?
Just like that.
Yeah. Oh, right there, that's where we're at.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, you can just look at me, but once in a while, I like to break the third wall and be like, fourth wall? What is it? What wall is it?
Okay, you see that? That was serious. Yeah.
But so did you find yourself drawn towards like extremely technical lyricism from very early on?
That's what I think, because my first rap that I wrote, you know, back in the day, it was like LL Cool J and Run DMC when I was in seventh grade. So, you know, everybody was like, motivating, I'm devastating, you know what I'm saying, innovating, you know what I'm saying? And mine was non-stop and rapping in the year of 85, but when the money dogs rapping, MC rappers want to crap, but when you hear the vicious beatbox, I can through your bones. Think of D-O-N-T, I said, think of D-O-N-T-E-Z-Z because he stands alone, some shit like that. That's how my rhyme ended, you know what I'm saying? So I was already rapid in seventh grade.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Like really rapping. Like, was that the norm at the time? Was your version of hip hop competitive lyrically to that extent?
Oh, yeah. Because everybody else was doing the simplistic shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So mine was automatically different. You know what I mean? So, you know, hence the strange music later on in life. You know what I mean? After having so many different record deals and the majors and this, that, and the other. So, you know what I mean? I guess it was always competitive because the guy I used to beatbox for, Money Dog, he was always battling people in school.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying? And when I spit my rap, you know, the first rap, he didn't speak to me no more. You know what I'm saying? Because he was the MC in school.
Right. You know, I was competitive to that degree.
Yeah, I was his beatbox.
Yeah.
I would beatbox for him. You know what I'm saying? Then I started rapping.
Amazing.
On a dare.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And he kind of rolled his eyes at me like...
Beatboxing a lost art, or is there anybody else? Is there anybody out there still really putting on for the beatbox world? I figured you would know for some reason.
Yeah, man, it's this young lady and her daddy, man. I don't know where they're from. Like they think they can do EDM sounds with their mouth. I can't do it.
That sounds interesting.
Oh man, you know what I'm saying? Motherfuckers are doing it. I always wanted to do a song with Bobby McFerrin.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And Dougie Fresh. And the mother, I mean, and the daughter and father, you know, a beatbox duo.
If you see somebody like Slick Rick, though, do you feel like...
I told him thank you.
Yeah. Does he, like, realize what an impact that he had on your life?
It was 3 o'clock in the morning, and he was about to go on stage, but he was asleep in the back of a car. And somebody, one of the promoters knew that I wanted to say thank you to him. So they knocked on the door and he was asleep. I said, hey, man, thank you so much. Without you, it wouldn't be no me. He's like,
yeah. What year are we talking?
This was like 2 years ago.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
He was in Kansas City.
I mean, you can't blame him. I'm sure, I'm sure you have a million people thank you every day. It can be a little.
But he'll hear it one day. You know what I'm saying?
I understand.
We've done Rock the Bells before and I didn't get to talk to him, you know what I'm saying? And shit like that. But I told him. So I ain't got to tell him no more.
Yeah. You just get it out the way.
I can tell everybody else. You know what I'm saying? Slick Rick, thank you, man.
Amazing. When did you start, like, recording? Like, when you really, like, or what was the process of slowly starting to take music more seriously, even when you were in high school?
Somehow, this guy named Montel Jones found out that I rapped. And he wanted to do jazz with a rapper. He played instruments. And he recorded me. I was young. You know what I mean? I had to be, I don't know how old I was, man. I was young as hell, man. And we recorded a couple songs. Then later on, when I was 19, I met DJ Icy Rock. And I hooked up with him and started doing music. I'm trying to remember all this. And in 93, we got our first record deal with Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis out here in L.A.
So that in 93 was the first record deal.
Yes.
And what was the steps that were taken in the path to that? Because I imagine that you've slowly been over the years trying to deal with the fact that the hip hop industry wanted to put you into a pretty simple cookie cutter format and that you were always aware that you were not going to be that and that it was the slow process of being able to not be that.
Yeah, that was after my first record deal, you know what I mean? Because my first one, DJ Icy Rock had some friends from Kansas City, and they had a deal with Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. It was an R&B group called Low Key.
Mm-hmm.
And they started managing me and pitched me to Jimmy and Terry, and they loved me. Brought me out here in 93 is when I met Tupac. You know what I'm sizzling? And they signed me to Perspective A&M right here on La Brea, it was at the time, A&M lot or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I got my first record deal, and it was off of a song called... Nomads, and we used KRS-One's piece from The Bridge Is Over. We're moving over there, and then we're moving over here. We're moving over there, and then we're moving over here. You know what I'm saying? Because of Nomads, you know, I was moving from place to place. And that's how I got my first record deal, you know what I'm saying? It went sour, you know what I mean? Because of the people that were running it, not Jimmy and Terry, but who we had running it at the time. They didn't know what to do with a black dude with... red spiked hair and stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? They didn't know what to do. Painted face, you know. And I understand that.
So you were doing the whole painted face, crazy hair thing even like in the very early days?
Well, it wasn't as painted then. You know what I'm saying? It was like, and I think the year was 1994 or 5. I've been drinking a little bit. Yeah, excuse me. You know what I'm saying? With the Killer Clown coming forth.
Mm-hmm.
The myth. In Kansas City, Missouri, when we were young, is that it was a clown that snatched children, drove a yellow van.
Mm-hmm.
It was mysterious. We never seen it, but we saw yellow vans all the time, and it would scare the hell out of us, you know. Later on in life, after being afraid of clowns when I was younger because of the killer clown myth, I became the clown because I wanted that mystique, the mysteriousness, and clown everybody lyrically.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Kansas City King, the killer clown is what I became. Started painting my face. My brother, Brian Dennis, rest his soul, who did my first face paint. I want to say 94, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Just 94. And ever since then, in honor of my fallen comrade, I still do the paint. I have a mask now that Corey Taylor of Slipknot turned me on to.
Okay, because I was watching an interview where you were talking about, yeah, I don't wear the face paint anymore, but I'm working on a mask.
Yes, yes, yes,
okay,
yes.
Okay, so now we're full mask territory. Yeah, but you very rarely paint up anymore?
Yeah, I have to paint up inside the mask, you know what I'm saying, so it won't look weird, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I have to do the eyes black and the nose black, you know?
Right.
And Corey Taylor turned me on to this guy named Jake out here who does Slipknot masks.
Mm-hmm.
And I needed masks for somebody that sweats and does like 2-hour shows, and Slipknot are the ones.
Right.
Me and Corey were already like this. Me and DJ Starscream were already like this. Me and Clown were already like this. So they helped me. And I got the mask made on the style from the face paint.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted it to be exactly like my face paint. And they did it. And I still have them to this day.
Yeah, I seen Slipknot in 1998 at like the local rock festival.
That's crazy. I heard them for the first time in 1999.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, you know, 99. That sounds more plausible.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was when they were first really popped off. Yeah, and that was just, I was astonished. I'd never seen anything like that before in my life.
Me either. Insanity.
Yeah.
I love Insanity.
When did your interest in metal start to pop up? Was that from early on?
Early in my childhood, my uncle Ike introduced rock to me because he worked for the school board and he had friends of different colors and, you know. So, you know, early on with Led Zeppelin and Jimi Hendrix and then The Doors.
Mm.
The Doors.
That really blew your mind?
Thank God for The Doors.
Right.
Because if it wasn't for The Doors,
there would be no Strange Music.
No.
Or it'd be called something else, at least.
It would be called Jimi Hendrix Music or something. You know what I'm saying? Beatles Music. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But thank God for Jim Morrison and his wonderful lyrics and his wonderful poetry and his will to be a rebel. Thank God for John Densmore for his wonderful drumming and Robbie Krieger for his wonderful guitar and rest in peace, Ray Manzarek, for his wonderful keys and their whole fusion of sound made me and inspired me to call my label Strange Music.
Mm.
And I was able to work with all of them, even with Jim on the chorus.
Mm-hmm.
Right before Manzarek died, we did Strange Days 2014, or was it 2015? 2014, I think. Yeah, I got that done. The people that inspired me to call my label Strange, I got to work with them. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, that's pretty crazy to think that, you know, you've done more than, you know, I mean, you got to give respect to the greats, but you've done more than most people to have mixed hip hop and metal aggressive music
yes.
together.
Yes.
And that you were probably the very, I would assume you're a real exception to the rule, being that young, that early into hip hop, but also really knowing about a lot of different rock groups. Yes. That's pretty telling.
Yes, man. Yes, man. Thank God to my family.
Mm.
You know, I grew up in a Christian house. You know what I mean? And, but my uncle Ricky was in the rap, you know, my uncle Ike was in the rap and R&B and rock, you know what I'm saying? Play me Benny and the Jets and all that shit from back in the day. You know what I mean? Just different types of music. And then MTV, we were able to get MTV when I was 11, I think.
Mm.
We couldn't afford it like everybody else when it first came out. Like when Thriller came out, I had to go across the street and watch it with my friends at their house.
First black artist on MTV, right?
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? We didn't have cable at that time. But shortly after, we got those channels, and then it was Adam Ant, and it was the Eurythmics. And,
right.
You know what I'm saying?
But you were drawn to that stuff, whereas like your average peer probably saw those videos and didn't necessarily care as much.
I was drawn to it.
Yeah.
I was drawn to it. I always loved music.
You're just a music fan, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it can be cultural, you mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? And it can be tribal to where we only listen, niggas only listen to this, and white folks only listen to this. And
but that didn't mean anything to you even that young. It's impressive, yeah.
Beautiful music is what I always loved,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm sizzling. So there was never no barriers for me and my homeboys in my neighborhood, blood neighborhood, and like, man, turn that white boy shit off. Not all of them, though.
Mm-hmm.
Big Scoob, you know, he would listen to some Slipknot with me in later years and stuff like that. But
it feels like the audience has come around to the idea of, you know, being interested in various types of music and being open-minded. Where in 97, when I was in like seventh grade, it felt like it was a war, yeah. You know, rock music versus rap music.
Yes.
It doesn't feel like that anymore.
No, it doesn't. You know what I'm saying? But when I was invited to do Rock Fest in Kansas City a couple years ago, you know, the YouTube comments, like, why would you have him at Rock Fest? This is Rock Fest, not Rap Fest. They didn't understand that I had a band of psychos and that my music had rock energy on certain songs. You know what I'm sizzling? They didn't know. A lot of people in Kansas City didn't know. 70,000 people saw me murder that stage. Papa Roach saw me murder that stage. Seven Dust up there saw me murder that stage. You know what I'm saying? Rob Zombie back there backstage saw me murder that stage.
Mm.
And everybody was like, wow. Even the crowd. And I went to YouTube afterwards to the highlights, and they like, Tech N9ne stole the show. And I was like, they were saying I didn't belong there, and people were saying, we see why he was there now.
Mm.
Because it should be about beautiful music. And the rock station there, Johnny Dare and all them were behind me. They asked me to do it again this year, but I already had a big show planned. Mm. I wanted to do it again. You know what I'm sizzling? I'm doing Rock on the Range this year again. You know what I mean? I just did Aftershock with 9 Inch Nails.
So you do a lot of the big, like, overseas metal rock type festivals, yeah?
Yes, I do. And
you feel like you still win over a lot of those fans that they, like, become converted to being fans of you all the time, yeah?
I do Hood Go Crazy at those shows.
Mm.
The one I did with Lil Wayne and B.O.B.
Yeah.
It don't matter. It's music, man. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? But, of course, I do my rock music as well. Riot Maker is in there, you know what I'm saying? On this tour, I got Starting to Turn with me and Jonathan Davis on the set list, you know what I mean? Can't do Wither yet. I need some help to do Wither, the one I did with Corey Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to do that one day.
You know, there was, like, I feel like the biggest moment for rap and metal colliding, at least from my vantage point, was like that Korn, Limp Bizkit era.
Yes.
But then that also kind of killed it in a way where it felt like rap metal, which seemed like a great idea at the time, it got so commercial so fast that people just got really grossed up by the idea of it.
Yeah,
and that must have been strange for somebody like you, who even I didn't know about you at the time, but you were probably already like experimenting with mixing the genres, and you saw that kind of it become uncool during that whole storm, would you say?
Yeah, that particular style. But the way we did it was so natural that it's undeniable. And when you look on the YouTube comments for Wither and Starting to Turn, it, like, Tech N9ne really fuses it perfectly because I'm not just doing it just to be doing it. It's like, oh, I'm just going to hop on this. I've always been on it as natural for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So nothing's going to sound generic coming from me.
That sounds more authentic. Like,
yes.
You know, man, I hate to take shots at the go, but Jada Pinkett Smith, remember when she had a metal band?
No, I don't remember
I think it was called, like, Words of Wisdom or something.
Oh, I don't know.
When I would listen to it, it very much felt like, you know, a rich, famous celebrity in her 40s or 30s who decided that she wanted to be the singer of a metal band. It felt like the least I'm not asking you to co-sign my opinion of her.
No, that's all good.
I'm sure you guys are good
you
friends.
You know the real shit when you hear it.
Exactly,
You know Rage Against the Machine when you hear it.
Yeah.
You know
especially in, like, aggressive music.
Oh, yeah. You know System of a Down when you hear it, because Serge, he had some rap in there. Wake up!
You remember the first time you heard that?
Oh, yes, man. You know what I'm saying? Blew me away. Right. You know what I'm saying? And that's why we did music.
Yeah.
Straight out the gate.
You were just talking about touring. Do you feel like this, having toured for this long, how does it still feel when you go on the road and you know you got a whole month on the bus or whatever?
Oh, it's okay, because I have a what you call star coach. I have a bed and shower in the back.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying I sleep like a log, man. I don't.
So you don't feel too like you, how do you feel when you're at home? Do you miss the road as soon as you get home?
No. I love my bed at home. Mm-hmm. When I get off the tour and get in my bed, oh my hell yeah. But I get my sleep on the road as well because it's my habitat.
Right.
Other than being with my kids, you know what I'm saying?
Do you not really party so much anymore?
No.
No.
No, you have to save your voice.
Your life force.
You have to save your voice for the next show.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing more important than the show.
Mm-hmm.
Not partying with these bitches afterwards. And you lose your breath talking to rapper motherfuckers that want to rap in your ear. And you, yeah. You know what I'm saying? And the next show, you don't have your voice. It's all about that.
You definitely can't be hanging out with any place where there's going to be people who are trying to rap to you.
Mm-mm,
no, that sounds terrible.
No. Nowhere you have to, I don't want to be in no loud music after the show.
Right.
You know what I mean? I used to, but I learned that, you know what I'm saying? I need my voice for the next crowd that comes. I have to give them the voice that's clean and not raspy and clear.
It's crazy you still have that respect for the actual craft all these years, especially because, let's be honest, rap is traditionally bad live.
Yeah.
You know, let's just call a spade on that one.
Yeah. Well, it's like that's because motherfuckers don't care.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You throwing motherfuckers from the street on stage with a mic and they let the fucking track sing the song. You know what I'm saying? And that's cool if that's what you do. But not me.
When I see people leave like comments complaining about like, oh, I just went to this rap show and the guy had a backing track and everything, it's like you feel bad for him because it's like, yeah, that is kind of whack, but that's also, you know, you better get used to it real quick because that's 95% of rappers. And I mean,
dude, you know, I've seen it and it worked. I've even seen it on BET awards and everything.
Oh yeah.
But you know what I'm saying? I've seen it on MTV awards too. So, you know what I'm saying? It's like, if you care, and it's scary to just you be the track, because if you fuck up,
you get lost in that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's happened to me back in the past, but practice makes perfect.
Very rarely now.
Very rarely.
Never.
You know what I'm saying? That energy right there, man, you know what I'm sizzling? It's like, after so much rehearsal and everything and being on the road that long, you know, it just comes natural. Mm. Every crowd is different though. You don't know, especially when it's a new crowd. Like when we first did Aftershock some years ago, I wanted to really please those people, and we didn't have our band. And we did a rock festival without a band and still rocked it.
Mm.
You know what I'm sizzling?
Right.
So,
do you, in terms of live, do you prefer the band?
Yes. I have to. I'm assembling a new band as I speak. I lost my last band. I didn't lose it, but it got lost.
What, just as a whole?
Yeah. You know, like some people can't get along and talk the right way, you know what I'm saying? It falls apart, you know. And I'm not there to stop it.
I'm always amazed that Bever. Seems like the craziest thing ever. Like it's hard enough to keep your own fucking brain together, never mind or be in a relationship with a girl, never mind having five dudes.
Yeah. Everybody's a star, you know what I'm saying? So egos come into play, but I ain't got no ego. I just want to fucking do the show and have a good time playing for people.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm sizzling? That's what it's all about. And I can't wait to see who my new band is going to be.
Mm.
I got some people in mind, you know, and I just want to make the best show for people. So people will say, you have to see this Tech N9ne show. And it's been happening like that for years.
Yeah. Do you feel like that's a huge part of like what has given you, like people always marvel at like, oh, like how the fuck does Tech N9ne have this insane, like, you know, loyal cult following? Do you think a big part of that is like the dedication to the live show?
A major part of it. That's how we gained all those fans without radio, without TV. You know what I'm sizzling? This is all talent going to a foreign town and like, Tech N9ne's in town, come to the show, seven people in the fucking crowd. And we do it like a 7,000.
Mm-hmm.
Them motherfuckers go tell their friends, we come back, it's 20 people. We come back, it's 50 people.
Mm.
We come back, it's 100 people, 300, 400, 500, 600, 700, you know what I'm saying? Then next thing you know, we're selling out Red Rocks at 10,000 every time we play. We just played it, 10,000 at a Tech N9ne show.
10,000?
Yes.
That's not regular.
Oh. 18,000 in Denver at Fiddler's Green. Yeah. Oof. That's what I'm talking about.
Serious.
That's work, man. That's work.
Fragile, and doing that independent.
Fragile and Hood Go Crazy just happened in my career in the past couple years.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? We didn't have a gold record. Well, we did have a gold record. We had Caribou Lou, but underground. We didn't have a video for fucking Caribou Lou. It wasn't on the fucking radio.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm sizzling? Fragile and Hood Go Crazy just happened.
Right.
The gold shit, you know what I'm saying, and the platinum shit is just now starting to happen later on in my career.
And it's insane because it's like not only are you independent, but you're this late in your career and still getting those looks. It's like that's laws of the music industry. That's not supposed to happen.
It's not supposed to happen.
No.
You know what I mean? It's not supposed to happen, and I'm totally grateful.
Like imagine if we were having, like, Ice Cube's a legend.
Yes,
but if Ice Cube had a number one hit right now or you know, even a top 100 type hit, we would all be like, what the fuck?
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. And
says a lot about the grind, you know?
Yeah. Because my will to want to touch every part of this sphere hasn't let up.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
When I listen to you talk about your albums, you're talking about them in a very, like, there's a qualitative judgment level that you could have for each album in the sense that your albums, in your opinion, keep getting better and that's a huge part of it. Would you not be able to make another album if you thought that you were eroding as a performer, as a rapper?
If I thought I was eroding as a rapper and a performer, I wouldn't do another album.
Mm.
But I'm younger as the days go. As time goes on, I'm younger and I'm hungrier. Mm. You know what I mean? Now, there's some things that could probably help that, like the IRS taking a lot of money, you know what I'm saying?
You dealing that right now?
Oh, no. I paid all that some, you know what I'm saying, 6 years ago maybe, you know what I'm saying? But divorce settlements might come lately and Jesus, you know what I mean?
Right.
And
thank God, you know, for those 18,000 fans, right?
On top of the oomph you got that music gives you, you know what I'm saying? You got that other thing that pushed you, like, hey, man, I have to keep this $3.3 million house.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Does that weigh on you?
No, it don't weigh on me. I am the god of my section, so I can make anything happen if I put my mind to it. I can think it and make it a reality. Everybody can. You have to think this shit up. Like, I'm going to do this. You know what I'm saying? Mm. I'm going to do this on some shit. We're gonna do this.
You got to be a special person to look at the world and to think there's a million rappers out there, but they need me. Like, my value that I'm adding to this, like, to be able to look out at the world and say that honestly and then act that way, and in your case, to act that way for such a much longer period of time than we're used to seeing anybody be able to have that confidence.
Yes.
It's a very rare thing.
Yeah.
And to be talented enough to fulfill it.
Exactly. It's like you have to be somewhat narcissistic.
Mm.
And like, ain't nobody got this. It's Shaf McOrgrove, Emmett Onik McKay, rapping backwards and shit. You know what I'm saying? You got to be kind of fucked up.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? To say, one day I'm going to rap with Eminem and it happens.
Mm.
One day I'm going to blow the fuck up. And I'm going to create a drink called Caribou Lou. And it's going to spread to the world. And it's happening. One day, I'm going to rap with Kendrick Lamar. Gold record. I'm going to hit 2 Chainz up and see if he wants to do Hood Go Crazy. Thank you, B.O.B., for the beat and the hook. We're going to make this pop. It's gold.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? You think it's strange music. Oh, I want it to be... I want the snake to be the S. I want the snake to be the S, and I want the bat wings to be the M. Not S and M like sadomasochism, just strange music.
Mm-hmm.
Inspired by the Doors. Travis said, you see a snake and a bat. And I'm like, yes. Had various artists try to get it down until it was perfect.
Really?
You think it, then you make it come to life. That's a blessing, man.
Yep.
This late in life, too, still got these ideas.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still hungry.
Part of the art isn't just creating the art by yourself or with whoever you're working with on the art. Part of it is, you know, because once you get to a certain point, it's like you start to judge your art on how many people it affects. And it's not just the numbers, the views, whatever. It's how many people you can change.
Exactly.
And that's part of the art, is that when you look out into a crowd of 10,000 people and you see people with your merch or your you know, face paint, all kinds of signs, all crazy shit like that. I mean, that's part of it. You didn't just create a CD or a bunch of videos on YouTube. You created a change in all these people, and that's part of it.
Yes, I wanted to be a psychiatrist before I rapped. Mm. So I ended up being my fans' psychiatrist with my darkness that I gave them, with my happiness, with my confusion. We connected on that level. It brought me off the stage, elevated on a level playing field. It's like, he's up there and he has the same problems with psycho bitches. Mm. He's up there and he still has a problem with his mom being sick from lupus, just like my mom. My mom is, you know what I'm saying? Thank you. You know what I'm saying? He's up there, but he's dealing with IRS problems because he was stupid. Damn, he's supposed to be smart. He has his own label. He's supposed to have that taken care of. It puts us on a level playing field. You know what I mean? And that's how you create fans. I learned that from Quincy Jones when I signed to Question Warner in 97. He said, Tech, rap what you know, and people will forever feel you're not tapped into emotion. Because no matter what color we are, no matter what religious belief, no matter what, how different the culture, we all have emotions in common as human beings. You would say some people might be emotionless. I don't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it may be an act or maybe a sickness. They say maybe Charles Manson didn't have any emotion. I'm sure he did. Somehow, some way. And we connect through emotion. Not me and Charles Manson. I'm just talking about people.
Yeah, I was going to say that would be kind of weird to connect with. I mean, he is dead, but I mean, just in general.
Yeah.
I mean, it is weird. Okay. You know, I always think about like the example that people give about like, all right, all the Germans weren't crazy and all the Germans weren't evil.
Exactly.
It was just the leadership was evil. And, you know, we're talking about World War II or whatever. Like it was, Hitler. And it was the insanity of them that bled through to the people and made them all complicit in all these terrible crimes.
Young men are crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I've been a young man.
Mm.
I did crazy shit.
Don't you feel lucky that you made it out of it in a lot of ways?
Yes. I still wear the colors, but young men are crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Young men, Boko Haram, young men, crazy ideas. You know what I'm sizzling? Warriors. Sometimes for stupid shit, you know? And that's what it is when you become an adult. You start to reflect on that dumb shit and be thankful that the dumb shit didn't take you under. You know what I'm saying? Al-Qaeda, young men, you know what I'm saying? Or it's a stupid old men controlling young men to do suicide bombings and shit.
You buy in on an ideology and then your actions are no longer, silly or illogical. They actually become the most illogical thing if you have completely decided that that ideology is true.
Totally.
And then as an artist, don't you kind of feel like you're helping your fans, helping the people out there in a way, you know, you're not indoctrinating them into a literal cult, but you're giving them another reason to live through your music.
People say, Tech, you saved my life with suicide letters. Tech, you saved my life with alone. I thought I was the only one alone. And you're up on a pedestal and you say you're alone on the road. And after the fans go that you're alone and this, that, and the other. Yeah. You know what I mean? Saving lives is why we still do it. It's why I still flip rhymes to see if they can say them with me. You know what I'm saying? It's like a game. You know, like look what I got now. You know what I'm sizzling? I'm still styling on motherfuckers, you know? It's beautiful, but when I give them my heart, they appreciate it because people are hurting because they broke. Not all of them. A lot of people don't have what they want, but they'll go buy that piece of music that give them that oomph to give back up and keep trying and pushing. I realized that my music does that for my fans, you know? And when they say they want to get married on my stage or you say something for my brother. He was a technician and he just died in a car wreck and all he played was you. You know, a song just dropped today. Futuristic just dropped it. It's called Talk. And the last thing I say, this is dedicated to my homie up in Florida. Rest in peace, War Baby. Let's go. War Baby was somebody I was supposed to work with up in Florida, and he died in a motorcycle accident recently. Mm. And the day I found out, I was writing Talk, and I put it at the end of my rhyme, you know what I'm saying, so he can live on. And on the video, I showed a picture of him on my phone that I had, you know what I'm sizzling, that they family hit me when the song came out. They family hit me like, thank you so much for mentioning Ryan like that, you know what I'm sizzling, thank you so much. He loved your music. He loved you. I'm like, I know he was dope. One of my homegirls in one of the towns turned me on to him, and I met him at my last tour, at the meet and greet. And I'm like, yo, what's up? You know what I'm saying? We exchanged numbers, and I didn't get to him in time to do the song. You know what I'm saying? They thank me. He's going to live on. He's going to be immortalized through that.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
And it's easy to forget how much that could mean to somebody, you know?
Yeah, or when I go, and which is, this is really hard too, when I go because somebody says, my son is in hospice, he has cancer, and his last wish is to meet you. We in Kansas City, go to the hospice center, just laying there, little young boy dying, play him a new song that I just recorded called Dying Flying. Maybe I should have chose that song. You know what I'm saying? And after I was playing, I'm like, damn, I'm playing, I'm dying flying. Shit. But that motherfucker who was like this in the bed, after I got through, he said, tech, that was dope.
Wow. That must have felt crazy. You know?
His parents were crying and shit, man. You know, he hasn't moved. That lifted him up.
Mm-hmm.
It was dope, too. Dying Flying was dope. It was so orchestral and everything. And I just recorded it, you know what I'm saying? And my people were like, why would you pick Dying Flying? You know
right.
what I'm saying? I'm like, dude, I just recorded it. I wasn't thinking.
Yeah, if you're going to be a Tech N9ne fan, you probably just got to have a little bit of a stomach for some,
yeah.
you know, harsh concepts here and there.
Yeah. But you're on your deathbed, and I got this new song called Dying Flying.
What, you think he's going to die because he listened to a song about dying? It's like,
you know what I'm saying? But I'm so proud of the song. That's what I chose. You
right.
know what I'm saying? I could have chosen something, but Dying Flying was the one, and it made him rise up and say, that was dope, Tech.
That's crazy.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And help people through music, man. You know what I'm saying? Strange music, man. You know, the snake is from the rod of Asclepius. You know what I'm saying? You know, when you see the rod of Asclepius, you see, like, at the hospital, you know what I'm saying? It's like snakes around a staff or something.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen that.
Yeah.
It represents medicine.
Right.
The bat is the nocturnal creature. I am the medicine navigate through the darkness. So that's what we do. We heal people with our music. So when I'm doing shit like Hood Go Crazy, the motherfuckers who want me to be healed be like, fuck that shit, Tech. What the fuck are you doing? I'm like, I've always been three-dimensional, mm-hmm. but I got something for you too.
Right.
I got something for everybody. You got any rock shit on this record? I got some rock shit too.
Mm.
I got something for everybody. I just don't have a whole record of it.
Right.
When I did KOD in 2009, when my mom was dying of pancreatitis, but she made it through back then, you know what I'm saying? I did a whole dark record. Fucked everybody up.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we want. We want all darkness. I can't do it. It's real music. It's real stories. I'm going to kill myself. I can't do that.
Right.
It took me down in a hole. Sorry and shit. Are we going to ever get a KOD too? No. Sorry. Can't do it. Scared the shit out of me. It's real music.
Right.
I ain't like it's horrorcore, no shit like that. I don't do horrorcore, and they gotta do my life.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like horrorcore because the music is dark and but the content is like, show me a god. Ah, I'm kind of thinking that it is a facade. Show me a god. Ah, and if it is, why ain't it doing his job? Show me a god. Ah, even if it's a thing, a man or a broad, show me a god, please. Let me know something is listening when I'm down on my knees because my angel is dead. That's real shit.
Yeah.
But it's a dark beat. You know what I'm saying? I'm going.
Right.
My mama is so tormented. You know what I'm saying? I'm talking about my mama. Fuck you. It's not no game.
Mm-hmm.
This is my heart on this motherfucking rap, nigga. Shit. It ain't fake. So it's hard to do the dark shit. Then you just bring us the dark shit. I go, okay, let me think of a dark story. Okay.
Right.
We're walking through an alley and I'm going to bite a bitch's nipple off. Okay, yeah, you like that? Sorry and shit.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
I mean, you make the kind of albums you want to make, right?
Yes.
But do you look at album sales? Does it mean anything to you?
No. Not until they're through the fucking roof. No.
So, because
if they're through the fucking roof, that means it's reaching everybody.
Right. Well, so it could affect you in a positive way. But if you put out an album that you really believed in and it did bad numbers comparative to your normal stuff,
it just
happened. It's just okay?
It just happened.
It did.
I didn't like it.
Really?
I was butthurt because I put the storm, I put everything into the storm and it got, man, it's good.
Mm-hmm.
So I got butthurt and I went on my own planet and created Planet. It comes out March 2nd.
Right.
And I did it. Would fuck everything. I don't care what nobody think. I'm just going to do what I want.
But did you have to, was that a reaction in itself to like, okay, I want to make an album that I think my fans will relate to more, even if maybe
I was mad that they didn't really like the storm. Right. So I didn't give a fuck if they didn't like the planet. I'm just going to make the music that I want to make. And I'm not thinking about the radio and everything. And what do you know? I ended up with fucking 7 fucking possible radio hits.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It just came naturally. You know what I'm sizzling?
Yeah.
Fuck.
You know what's going to be great is that I'll always have rappers on here who say, like, you know what I'm saying a lot. And, like, there'll always be someone who counts the number of times that they say it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really looking forward to see the, you know, I'm sizzling count on this one.
Oh, yeah.
And how long have you been saying that?
I hooked up with Yuck Mouth.
Oh, okay.
In 97, I was doing work with QD3. And he said, you know what I'm sizzling is Bay Area talk.
Mm.
Technizzle, sizzling, what's sizzling? It's all Jesus, all that shit. It's Bay Area talk.
You've always been more interested in slang than the average person, mm-hmm. I'm guessing. You always had an affinity for it.
Slang?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I love it. Like I don't like say half the shit that I know about, you know, because it's not really my...
I've been connected to the Bay since,
right. You
know, earlier.
That's one of my favorite things about them is just like hearing the ridiculous shit that they...
E-40.
Yeah, it's,
you know,
it's beautiful.
E-40, you know,
it's one of the best parts about rap music.
Yeah, man.
Picking up on the local lingo.
Yeah, ain't nobody fucking with E-40 when it comes to lingo. Mm-hmm.
There's a guy named Draco the Ruler who just... He says he has the most bizarre slang I ever heard in my life. He's LA South Central dude and is bizarre. I could recommend it. I'll send you some links.
Yeah. E-40 says shit that spreads to the rest of the world, though. You know what I'm saying? Like, motherfuckers use it.
That's true.
You know what I'm sizzling?
I never thought that when Chief Keef started the thought thing that would take over the world. Everybody knows about thoughts these days.
Yeah, thought, it stuck.
Yeah. That one's had some longevity.
The hoes over there.
What do you think your greatest contribution slang-wise has been? Either something you created or that you popularized.
I popularized Caribou Lou.
Mm, the drink, yeah.
Yes. That was the most popular thing that I've ever said.
Mm.
It went platinum.
This is probably the question that would like relate to most of our audience the most. It's like, I just know so many kids who start to get, you know, somewhat of a career going on SoundCloud and YouTube and everything like that. And then obviously this is LA. They start doing all the label meetings. The label thing is always just right in their face as an option that you could get some amount of money and start doing that. And I feel like with some of the more established guys that I see who their career starts doing actually pretty well, they start to build up more of a loyal fan base, that the sell is that at a certain point you can't keep growing as an artist if you don't sign to a major. But obviously, your career completely contradicts that. But what do those artists need to know about really building up? Because, you know, you have your touring, you have your merchandise, but you have to take all these different things very seriously in order to hold together the business, right?
Yes, you do, man. You have to have a business mind behind you if you don't have the business mind. And you have to have somebody that knows that people are walking billboards. So if you have a product that's good enough for people to buy, they would wear it and it will start conversation. If you wear a Tech N9ne shirt out here today, somebody will stop you and say, Tech N9ne, yeah, I fucks with you.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a family. It's like Fight Club. When you walk in the restaurant and the cooks all nod at you, or, you know what I'm sizzling? You go to fucking Starbucks and all the baristas, you know what I'm saying?
Secret organization. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? The technicians. But we're growing. Mm. They're getting younger. And they're taking it everywhere else. You know what I'm saying? Lil Wayne helped that when he put me on the Carter 4. Mm. The motherfucker's like, who is that nigga rapping? Hot's what it is. Watch what the pop, the hop, the pop, the hop, the beard. Not only get the reasons that really pops in the crib. So hating motherfuckers, you better stop with the jibs. I don't know what I said. But I'm just going.
Right.
Off of the thiz, but I'm off of the pizza. Because I was off of the thiz at that time because I was on thiz a lot.
When did that stop?
Oh. I've been clean since 06 or 07.
Oh, shit, really?
Yeah.
Even, did you stop smoking weed then? Or?
No, I stopped smoking weed here in L.A. in 98.
Oh, okay.
And I started back.
Oh.
On my 42nd birthday.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? I'm supposed to say 22nd birthday.
But do you still smoke now?
Yes.
Okay.
Every once in a while.
Or not a lot. Okay.
Not a lot. You know what I'm saying? Only when I'm at home and I'm, you know, because I'm trying to do some shit like moon rock or something. So I can't that and go somewhere. I can't be high because I got to take pictures everywhere I go. You know what I'm saying?
You do the edibles and everything?
Yeah, I do the edibles. I got Rice Krispie edibles at my house. People make them for us. You know what I'm saying? We got blocks of it. You know what I'm saying? We can eat it when we eat pieces if we want to. You know, I think it's almost gone.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. See, everybody I know just smokes blunts all day, every day. And I'm slowly starting to think that I don't want to smoke blunts all day, every day.
A piece of a Rice Krispie edible will put you right.
Oh, yeah.
Relax you.
It's just the communal element that I think people like about that.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Passing blunts around and everybody. Everybody. Sick and shit. Mm.
I see people like all the time who walk into a social setting and then they just like, it seems like the reason why they're rolling blunts or smoking or whatever, it has nothing to do with what the drug's doing to you. It has everything to do with like them feeling awkward in that social situation and they want something to do with their hands and to talk about and pass around. And sometimes I just look at people like, you know, you don't want to smoke weed right now.
You know what I'm saying?
You're full of shit.
Yeah, man. You know what I'm saying? It's cool, but you can't trust everybody. You know what I'm saying? I like my edibles.
Yeah, edible thing. Mm-hmm. A little bit more safe, I guess. Yeah.
Yes.
So one question I really wanted to ask about was just the God thing. Like, I feel like that is a constant theme in your music, but it's more of a questioning thing and like you searching, just different from the average person who seems like they usually have their mind 100% made up.
Oh, I used to question.
Okay.
You know, and I was wondering if anything was listening, but when my mom passed, I didn't feel like I was in God's graces anymore because I thought I could go do my sold out Denver show and then go back home the next day on my day off and see my mom for one last time. And when I landed in Denver, she was gone on June 6th, 2014. I was like, what the fuck? I thought that I was in God's graces, that he would give me this last piece, you know, of goodbye. And I didn't get it. So, I feel like I'm just like everybody else.
Mm.
Ain't nobody looking over me, you know what I'm saying? But I found out that God is an energy, a good energy, man. And that thing that I thought was listening, that energy is listening. I believe that. After getting a couple of lessons from my friends at Anonymous, you know, I started to understand God.
That helped turn you on to Anonymous, like the hacking group?
Yes. I got friends.
Really?
Yes.
Damn, I wouldn't have expected that. That's interesting.
Oh, yeah, man. They done posted so many things with me in it and everything.
Hackers and stuff in general. Yeah. They're on your side. I guess I can see that, yeah.
Yeah, we're allies.
Allies.
We're trying to do something. We're trying to do something. I can't tell you what it is, but we're trying to do something. Something good for the people, you know what I'm saying? That's all they want to do is good for people.
Yeah.
Anonymous wants to do good for people. They want justice. They want equality. They want, you know, evil motherfuckers away.
Mm-hmm.
Just like me. So we linked up. And it taught me a lot about evolution. It taught me a lot about a lot of stuff, you know. And I believe that there's good energy and bad energy, good God, evil devil. We got all of it.
So you're not into the scripture and that whole side of things? It's more of just a...
I was raised with the scripture.
Mm.
But I know man wrote the scripture.
Right.
And I know man has good ideas and good intention, but power fucks up a lot of men. man abuse power. I don't use my powers for evil.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So
do you feel like you ever started to like abuse your fame and your position, or have you always had a good relationship with it?
No, I never had to, you know what I'm saying? I never had to force myself on some pussy or anything like that. Pussy came to me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I never had to use my, hey, I'm Tech N9ne, suck my dick. I never have to do that shit, you know what I'm saying? And I never will. And that's what I call using my powers for evil, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Just trying to manipulate people and take things from them. No, I was never that person, you know. I don't think I've ever told my fans to kill anybody. I know I haven't. So that's using my powers not for evil. I haven't told my fans to jump off any cliffs or anything. I just told them to hold on. In life, your time to shine is coming.
Mm-hmm.
I had something on the album that said, message to the mentally disturbed, don't kill yourself or anyone else. Stay here with us. Your time to shine is coming. Trust. That was the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just motivation. Don't kill yourself or anyone else.
It's important.
Stay here message. With us.
There's a lot of like celebrity suicides lately.
Yeah, man. You know what I'm saying? I know how hard it can be.
Mm.
And mental disorders are real.
Have you struggled with depression a lot throughout your career?
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah. My mom's been sick all my life. Yeah. Yeah, I've been trying in this music all my life. Been shunned all my life, my hip-hop life. Like, weirdo, he corny, paints his face.
But has not being accepted by your peers sometimes weighed on you? Is that the kind of thing that would...
Oh, yeah.
Really?
My whole fucking journey. I just now start saying I'm not shoving anything good down anybody's throat. Fuck you.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I was like breaking into colored houses, you know what I'm saying, with T-Pain, trying to... get back the black fans that I lost who thought I was a devil worshiper, you know what I'm saying? And message to the black man, and y'all niggas ain't at my shows, where the fuck are you at? You know what I'm sizzling? And I love everybody that's at my shows, but where's the black folks and all that kind of shit? You know what I'm saying? I said, fuck that shit. It's not about that. It's about whoever the fuck loves it and want to get this good music, come get it. Fuck anybody else who thinks it's fucked up and they don't want it. I'm not forcing it down your throat. Fuck it.
You had insecurities about that at a certain point when you look out in your crowd and it would be very non-black?
No, because I always appreciated anybody who wanted to fucking listen. It didn't matter that.
But did you feel like it was weird that you just were having a hard time connecting with your own people?
Or? I didn't think it was weird. I thought that it was fucked up.
Yeah.
That I'm this master rapper and with these wonderful ideas, and my niggas was like, "Yeah, whatever, nigga." You know what I'm saying? And that's slowly been changing.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't give a fuck anymore.
Yeah. Once you're at your position, your age, your number, amount of time in the game, it's like, you know, people want to see you be your authentic self. And I think trying to fit into boxes, especially once you're already a legend. Yeah. Like Jay-Z got an unbelievable amount of respect, I think, this year because he came out and made an album with beats that sounded like the kind of beats he probably wanted to rap on.
Yeah.
And that was beautiful to me.
Yeah. I think me targeting the black race made my fans like, what about us, Tech? Well, we ain't good enough? Yes.
Mm.
Fuck anybody else that don't want to come over here. And if motherfuckers want to start coming, they can come when they want. We can have a sold-out party over here, though.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck that. This is strange music over here. And motherfuckers come to my meet and greet like, Tech, we listening, bro. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, yeah.
Somebody with a cult following like yours is always sort of in this strange position where you want to just deliver to your hardcore fans, but at the same time, you know... that in a lot of ways, if you're not growing as an artist or you're not growing your fan base, then it's probably getting smaller.
Well, see, since I started, I wanted to appeal to everybody. Every fucking body. That's why when I saw everybody wasn't there, I targeted the motherfuckers that weren't there.
Mm.
Because my whole journey was to turn everybody into technicians.
Mm.
That's still the journey. So I was going to grow no matter what. I was going to fucking work my way up to working with T.I. and Wayne and Corey Taylor and fucking Serge Tankian and, you know what I'm saying, Jonathan Davis and fucking Deftones and Gary Clark Jr. and Floetry. And, you know, it just goes on. The list goes on. Tupac, you know, Ice Cube, Scarface, E-40, Yuck Mouth, you know, so everybody I work with, MC Ren, you know what I'm saying? I was going to work my way up to all these people, Kendrick Lamar, you know what I'm saying? Like, I always wanted to appeal to everybody. Mm. That's why I'm three-dimensional. The king, the clown, and the G. The king, the clown, and the G. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's always been me. So you can, if you a gangster, you're going to like the G. So, you know, if you like to party and fuck bitches and get high and shit, you're going to love the clown. If you love lyrical, acrobats and shit, you know what I'm saying? You're going to love the king because nobody can beat the king. I was always supposed to appeal to everyone. You know what I mean? So I don't feel no pressure as I'm growing. And these people like, we don't like you to be with the mainstream motherfuckers. I'm like, I don't give a fuck, nigga. This is what I've been. I'm supposed to appeal to everybody. So that's why everybody is coming in to work with a nigga. And it's only because of the skill, because not one of them motherfuckers ever charged me a penny, not even Eminem. Mm. You know?
That's amazing. That's crazy.
Yeah.
He got enough money, let's be honest.
Yeah.
He ain't got to come tax you. Like, oh.
But that's his time, though. That's his time, though.
I just feel like, I mean, I think it's so cool about Eminem that he was down to do that, because that's really like, I mean, I've always just heard that about him, that he's always the guy who, even after all these years, even as successful as he is, he's still in his rhyme notebook, scribbling away, still trying to put together words.
Yeah. He don't work with just anybody.
He don't work with damn near anybody.
You gotta be dope to work with that motherfucker. You gotta be dope to work with Kendrick Lamar. Mm. Especially if you ain't paying no dollar for it. People think, oh, he rich, he on the motherfucking Forbes list. He done paid them niggas like $500,000 a piece or something. No. Those are my relatives.
Realistically, the amount of money that those dudes would probably charge if they didn't want to do the verse is enough that somebody like you would not be willing to part with that amount of it. Exactly. So it's like, to me, it seems obvious it's for the love, you know?
Yeah, 2 Chainz, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, it just goes on and on, you know
what I mean? Who stands out that you'd still like to work with? Some any lifetime goals?
Outkast.
Mm.
Andre and Big Boy.
They could barely do a song together themselves, never mind with you.
I could probably get them together, though.
That'd be great.
You know what I'm saying? 21 Pilots.
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm saying? I love what Tyler Joseph does, you know what I'm saying? I love what Josh does, you know? I think they are a wonderful group, talented, like a motherfucker. I sent them a song.
I find it so fascinating that your approach to features is pretty much like the opposite of the way that the average artist is with features. Normally, features are tacked on by the label. They're only done to sell more records. They're only done to appeal to more people. Mm-hmm. With you, it's an aspirational thing, number one, because it's kind of like, you know, not only did I make this great song, that's one way that you can flex as a rapper, but also to get a Kendrick Lamar verse, to get an Eminem verse is like, I mean, the average rapper who wants those verses wouldn't even try.
I'm saying.
The fact that you go out and actually get it done is like, it is pretty amazing, you know, just from a networking perspective or a respect perspective, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. I've been in it for a minute, man, and I really care about music, and I think that's why I'm in the position I'm in, you know, to where all the artists, when Gary Clark Jr. will do a whole show in Kansas City and I'm on tour somewhere and he goes to my studio and knocks that shit out and sings on it and does a guitar solo and everything, you know what I'm saying? And same thing with Eminem, you know, I'm sizzling, or Kendrick Lamar, or T.I. fucking murdered it and came and did the video and everything. You know what I'm saying? MGK, you know, just it's Logic, fucking Joyner Lucas, you know what I mean? I'm just in the circle of talented people, you know what I'm saying? Deftones, man, you know what I'm saying? We did a wonderful song, you know? Busta Rhymes, you know, Twista, you know.
Man, Busta Rhymes and you, I'd love to see you two in a room together. That must be a crazy energy.
Oh, it's a stupid energy, man. Yeah. When he sees me, General, come over here, General. And he big, you know, let me tell you something, nigga. I've never seen anything like that before in my life. You know what I'm saying? That's beautiful, man.
You ever hear this kid, Ski Mask the Slump God?
Yes, I heard of Slump God.
Okay. He's been kicking it, doing a bunch of music with Busta Rhymes, and he's like from sort of the generation that I'm associated with, of like the younger SoundCloud kids. He's the one who, in my opinion, is like the craziest lyricist. And I mean, the fact that Busta fucks with him kind of says a bunch.
Yeah, man, I've been hearing a lot about Slump God, and all my fans keep putting his name on my...
Oh, my God. I bet I bet... Damn.
Yeah. You should work with Slump God. Everybody's saying it. Everybody's saying the same thing with XXXTentacion. You should work with XXXTentacion. You know what I'm saying? And he said that me and Eminem made him want to rap and shit like that. You know what I'm saying?
So, hey, I'm the A&R of the century if I make that happen.
Yeah, I'm taking
credit right now. No matter how it happens, I'm just going to try to take credit for it.
So, you know, I know Tentacion can rap. You know what I'm saying? I heard it.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
You know, when I think about him, I hope he makes it to your age because I feel like he might be a calm down version of himself, kind of like the way you are probably a calm down version of your 19-year-old self now.
Yeah.
I'd like to see him in his 40s. That'd be nice.
He'll be all right. He'll be all right.
Yeah.
You know what I'm sizzling? I think Lil Pump going to be all right.
Lil Pump's my guy.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Esket it, motherfucker.
You know Holy shit.
Come on, man.
I didn't see that coming.
I've been esketting it for a minute.
Yeah.
As soon as I seen it, esket it.
That's amazing.
I hit that nigga and said, esket it. You know what I'm saying? On his... You know what I'm saying? Wow. Ask it out. You know what I'm saying? It's a real long one. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, my God.
You know what I'm saying?
That's amazing. That's a lot of people would not have expected you to have any kind of appreciation for that.
Yeah, I came in with the sauce. Bitch, I flat real raw. That was my shit, nigga.
That's an article title right there. Tech Nine says he fucks with Lil Pump. You know they're going to be
my
doing that.
My fans know it. They see me say it's getting. I follow music.
Yeah.
I don't give a fuck what kind of music it is, man. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? You rather him rapping or you rather him clapping and trapping? What do you want? I'd rather him rapping. Let the nigga rap.
When you look at a lot of like the newer up-and-coming rappers who aren't terribly lyrical, though, is do you have a degree of appreciation for it just because you can see the hustle, you can see the grind, or is it kind of is it rough for you because you care about lyricism so much?
I care about lyricism, but I understand that lane.
Yeah.
And I want them to keep going. You know what I'm sizzling? Because they could be doing other things that are not positive. Even if the message ain't positive. Mm-hmm. Even if the message is Zans and Percocet, Molly Percocet, whatever the fuck. You know what I'm saying? Let them niggas rap.
Mm.
Don't let them trap and don't let them clap.
As long as it ain't that,
Yeah. That's my stance on it. You know what I'm sizzling? Now, when niggas fall off beat and make me, fuck. Mm. If you fall off beat, we ain't gonna be able to do music.
Mm.
But if you can stay on beat, we could do some fucking music.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Because my equilibrium is off when niggas fall off beat.
Mm. There's something unsettling about that.
Yeah, it is.
You could be in the studio and somebody's doing a bad verse.
Like A Boogie with the Hoodie is on beat.
He's good.
And then Kodak came in on Bitch, I'm Drowning, and he kind of fell off a couple times. Like, oh, fuck.
Really?
I'm like, stay on, my nigga. Oh, shit. I want him to stay on. You know what I'm saying? It's like, Jesus. But you know, A Boogie with a Hoodie is in pocket.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking wonderful. And I'm like listening to Kodak, and much love to Kodak. You know what I'm saying? But nigga, stay on that beat. You know what I'm saying? Dun, 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 you know what I'm saying? You got to stay on that motherfucker. You know? Like you surfing.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard, man. Some niggas just can't. And everybody's not a fucking master rapper, my nigga.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lane for there's a lane for that. Because if it wasn't, Kodak wouldn't be popping like he is.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm sizzling? It's people that want to listen. And it's people that don't give a fuck about your stand on beat, obviously. You know what I'm sizzling? But me? Nigga fall off beat, nigga. I'm like, ah.
Mm-hmm.
If I rap with somebody that's falling off beat, you know that it was just for the name. And I don't rap for the name. Mm-hmm. I'm going to put you on this song because who you are and you can bring more fans. No, nigga. Just because I put Eminem on a song don't mean that his fucking fans going to buy all my shit. They did not. Mm-hmm. I did that shit for the culture, my nigga, for rap masters. You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to do 21 Pilots because Tyler Joseph can rap his ass off and sing his ass off, my nigga. The song I sent them, you know what I'm saying, it's called Bad Kid. They couldn't do it at the time, but you know what I'm saying, they said they loved it, you know what I'm saying, wonderful. Maybe they'll do it one day. It's a timeless song, so I don't give a fuck. You know what I mean? Because they're talented individuals. You know.
Do you think a lot of young rappers these days are... In a lot of ways, you know, that essence of like lyrical battling and wanting to be, to rap your ass off, to be the best, to defeat, you know, to be better than your peers or whatever, that a lot of that's kind of been lost on the current generation. I was saying to somebody recently, I'm like, I don't ever hear these kids brag most of the time about their lyrical ability. They'll have whole beefs online. They'll be bragging about who's got the most money, who's got the most followers, but they never mention who, and if they say anything about the quality of the music, it's like, my songs are bigger. It's not, I rap better than you.
Well, there's a lane for everything. You know, it's battle rapping going on everywhere. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know what I'm sizzling? You can turn on and see battle rapping everywhere. You know what I'm sizzling? There's a lane for that. Mm-hmm. Motherfuckers get paid for that, I think. They have prizes and shit.
They still do it, yeah.
There's a lane for selling records.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? There's a lane for doing music that challenges the thought. There's Kendrick Lamar. There's Childish Gambino. There's Chance the Rapper. There's J. Cole, you know what I'm saying? There's J. Electronica. There's Calm Sense, you know what I'm saying? There's Talib Kweli with Traveling Light with Anderson .Paak, you know, fucking dope, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's Kanye, there's Tech N9ne, you know what I'm saying? There's, you know, it's people out there. There's a lane for all of us. Let them niggas have their lane and let them niggas get their money as long as they can. Let Yachty get his fucking money. Leave him alone, nigga. This nigga's businessman getting shit with Target and everything. Fuck yeah. Do your motherfucking shit. If you don't like that shit, just don't talk about them niggas. Make your money in your lane. I'm making it in my lane. I'm selling out my shows.
Yeah.
Why the fuck I care how big them niggas is? You think I don't see how many followers Lil Pump got?
Yeah. 10 million.
Yeah. I ain't close to that.
No.
But I'm going to get it close to that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? These kids, man, they love that shit.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful. Let that nigga shine, man. Leave that nigga alone. You know what I'm saying? That's how I feel. But you got people that really love technical music. Like, how you gonna speak up for them motherfuckers? Shut up, man.
Yeah. Shut up. You get turned off by elitism in that regard?
I just wish people, if you don't like it, shut the fuck up.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, why would Karis want to be talking about Nelly? Why would Snoop Dogg be talking about Soulja Boy?
Remember when Ice-T and Soulja Boy beefed? That was, I didn't like seeing Ice-T do that.
Me either.
It's like seeing your grandpa go out on the front yard and yell at some of the local kids.
Rap is not supposed to be one way.
Mm.
Just because you like the era of Tribe Called Quest and De La Soul and Lords of the Underground, you know, and The Far Side and Freestyle Fellowship, and you know,
especially if you're interested in
that's cool
staying in the game for a long time, which you clearly are. It's like you just realize, because if you had stuck with the values of in terms of what hip hop was in 1985, you never would have made it to 1995. Exactly. You always got to be adapting,
So if you like that era, you still can go get that music, you can still go see Tribe Called Quest do shows.
Mm.
I can't wait to see them motherfuckers. I can't wait to see De La Soul again. I can't wait to see Pharoah Much again. You know what I'm sizzling? I would love to see Ahmad.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? But I would also love to see fucking Travis Scott. I've been waiting. I'm trying to find it. God, it worked so much. I really want to see fucking shit look turned like a motherfucker.
I always hear that, I haven't seen him live, but I always hear that his live show is so crazy that it has a lot of the element of kind of what you're talking about, where his energy level is so crazy that it really endears his fans.
His crowd is like this the whole time.
Right.
I saw the same thing for Ferg, ASAP Ferg.
He's good too, you're right,
Trap Lord, nigga, power. I went to his show, nigga, and met him backstage, nigga.
I've seen him live, and it's very, you know what I'm saying? He's like that.
It's popping. You know what I'm saying? You would think at a Travis Scott show, as the bridge is over his own, fucking KRS-One.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Trap Lord had the whole motherfucking balcony bouncing. When you down here and you looking up at the balcony, everybody, that motherfucker moving like that. If it don't bend, it'll break like a roller coaster, nigga.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I was there. I see it.
That's crazy.
Tech N9ne show. Motherfuckers is moshing and blah, blah, blah. It's the shit.
Yeah.
It's all out there for us, motherfucker. If you don't like that shit, listen to some other shit. Leave them niggas alone.
Mm-hmm.
I love music.
Yeah, has the mosh pit game changed over the years, or is it just as brutal as it used to be? Or you probably see a lot of trends in the way things change with the pit, because you're standing up there looking into it.
I kick it off. I'm the Riot Maker. I got songs called Riot Maker.
Right.
I got a new song I'm doing called No Reason, the mosh pit song.
Huh.
And it's some fucking urban fucking, we're going to be moshing to some fucking trap shit. Wait till you hear No Reason.
I'm ready. I want to come to a Tech N9ne show. That's one thing I'm pissed off I haven't experienced. I'm gonna be texting whoever, making sure that happens, because I gotta see that experience.
It's sometime in May. You know what I'm saying? I'll be here.
Beautiful.
At the Belasco or some shit.
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm saying? That's yeah, I'm throwing together the best show too. You know what I mean? I'm trying to pull it off, man.
Do you prefer at this point? Do you prefer okay. We got a time constraint. That's probably good anyway. We're about hour 10 on this.
Yeah, I got a shit.
You got shit?
Yes.
All right.
My stomach is like, brr, brr, brr.
Oh, May 10th. Okay, we don't have a time constraint, but he does have to shit, so that's important.
I just ate, you know what I'm saying? And all that shit is moving through me.
What'd you eat?
What is it? Freddy's?
What food in particular, though? I'm wondering what your diet's like.
Oh, I'm on a regimen, but I haven't been doing it out here. You know what I'm saying? I have meal prep. My lady makes my meal prep. I eat every 2 hours.
Oh, okay.
So my stomach be growling out here. Arr, you eat one time in a day, and then you got all these meetings and shit, so you don't eat again for hours.
I'm 34, and I feel like, you know, at this point, I got to be really on top of my, like, health and shit. The drugs, putting that coke up my nose, that's not working anymore. Yeah. And, like, you know, I'm finding my old habits, like, oh, let's get a hamburger for lunch. It doesn't even come. It's like no. You need salad. You're like, what are you? You want to torture your body?
Exactly. Yeah, you gotta look out for that shit. I had chicken Joseph, whatever the fuck it is, a thin piece of chicken, and it's lightly breaded and it has tomatoes on it with balsamic, you know what I'm saying, sauce or whatever, or vinegar or whatever.
I know this is kind of a cliche, like rapper tours a lot question, but what's your rider like?
I don't have a rider. I just tell motherfuckers, you know what I'm saying, I want my Honey Nut Cheerios in the morning with my Fairlife chocolate milk, because that's the only milk to make me don't fuck my stomach up. I want my chicken sausage, and that's it. You know what I'm saying? And I'll order baked chicken after the show and shit like that, and some vegetables. You know, when I'm trying to do good. But on my cheat day, I'll go get some motherfucking Old Spaghetti Factory and. Or what they said is called Chicken Vesuvius and shit. Yeah, Spaghetti Vesuvius.
I know you got shit, but this is my last question. I really wanted to wrap up is when you're in the booth, how much punching in do you have to do? Right, what's the recording process like? Because most rappers I know punch in like crazy. Your verses are ridiculously technical. I try to
say as much as I can. You know what I'm sizzling before I slur. If I slur, I tell my engineer. We call him Benjineer. His name is Ben. Benjineer. I tell him. Bring it back. I said that. I slurred that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I might say, fed up with everything. I'm cynical than I ever been. I make the Beretta ring. If any come on the better king, alluding to leveling. If I say, if I fucked up, alluding to leveling, a leader living a better dream, all them L's, I was like, take it back. And I'll do it again. Fed up with everything. I'm cynical than I ever been. I make the Beretta ring. If any come on the better king, alluding to leveling, a leader living a better dream. Kind of like the brother on the side of Coretta King. You know what I'm saying? I can say all that shit on him. And then I was like, okay, let me hear that and make sure I did it good.
Right.
And he's like, fed up with everything. I'm cynical than I ever been. I make the Beretta ring. If any come up, you know what I'm saying? And I'm like, okay, it's clean.
You ever do it in like one take just by accident because you happen to be having a good day?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can really? Do it. I can do it, you know, because I practice my rhymes. You know what I'm saying? But when it's complicated, I might have to. I try to get it perfect for the ear, but I write to perform. Mm. I put breaths in it. I just don't punch in and just be rapping nonstop, and I can't do it live.
You always rap to the beat? Or write to the beat, excuse me?
Yes. Okay. Yes, I've written to the without a beat, with a beat in mind before, though. You know what I'm saying? I started like that. But I prefer to match the beat, the feeling of the beat, and then I'll come with the title because of how the beat feels.
Right.
So the beat will feel like I'm that emotion. You know what I'm saying? So if I punch, it's because I slurred. But the people, they made me a monster. I need to get away and may need some contra. Bend on my hand, I'm going crazy and bonkers. Like I'm rich and my baby's Ivanka. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want to say all that clean.
Mm.
If I fuck up, but I'll keep going. If baby's Ivanka, I can take a breath. They don't give a damn about a good nigga. They want to take what you're giving and put you out on the river without a predicate. That'll give you better, or whatever the fuck I say. See, if I fuck up like that, I have to go back and do it again to get it perfect. That's when I insert breaths so I can fucking perform that shit for my fans, because without the show, motherfucker, what are you?
That's one thing I get from your music a lot, too, is that this, like, over time, especially as your music progressed, that it sounds more and more tailored for the live experience.
Yes.
That it's you figuring out what works live and then making your music kind of in that direction.
I found that out early on. Like, who got this motherfucking house on lock? Einstein's Tech 9? KC Mo. Oh, shit. Okay. I see what I gotta do now. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Crowd participation. Fuck yeah. I found that out early on. So yeah. So when I was writing Fresh Out of Fucks, the one I was just rapping, the hook, da na 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 na, I da na 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 na, am da na 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 na, what da na na, Fresh Out of Fucks. You know what I'm saying? I'm Fresh Out of Fucks.
It's meant, it's like you can envision the crowd and yeah, what they're gonna do to it.
Fresh Out of Fucks. Yeah. Elbowing niggas. Fed up with everything. I'm cynical than I ever been. You know what I'm saying? Everybody's right. Fed up with everything. Shit's fucked up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Thank you. I got shit.
Yeah, you got a shit. All right. Very simple question. Last question. How many more years you think you got of killing the game before you're going to have to eventually kind of chill out a little bit?
Four.
At least four.
Four. That's it. I gave myself four more years.
You think 50 is the limit?
Yes, I know. You know what I'm saying? I know. Okay. It starts March 2nd when my planet, the clock starts.
Right.
For a second. Planet. 4 years after that.
Who's your successor in your mind? Where are all the technicians going to go?
I got artists that need that.
You got a bunch of artists.
I got artists that can take it. And I can get on their records every once in a while. Mm-hmm. I could do festivals every once in a while. I could do all that shit. But the grind and all that kind of shit.
The touring stuff will slow down.
I want, and that's my goal, 4 years. You know what I'm saying? Now, my partner Travis, like, who knows what's going to happen in 4 years? You might say, fuck that. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
But right now, I'm like, I don't rap for you motherfuckers so long.
Mm.
So many years making millions, you live to become the villain.
Mm.
I can see it slowly happening. Ah. Fuck Tech N9ne. Fuck you. What's up? Meet me at my show. What the fuck you want to do? You
know? Right.
Oh, no. That's idiotic.
But I mean, it takes a lot of just consistent work to keep yourself, to be as late in the game as you are and to still be at the position you are. It's a daily grind. It's not like something you can just sit back. You're not that like legacy artist that could disappear for 5 years and come right back and you're headlining the Super Bowl. Like, no, it's, you're like a foot soldier. You're in that shit daily. Yeah.
This next 4 years, we're going to hit it hard as fuck. And that's why Don't Nobody Want None is first. You know what I'm saying? I dedicated to all the DJs and the dance crews and my late great bodyguard Big Nick, you know what I'm sizzling, you know. We started with that, and then No Reason is coming next with MGK, you know what I'm sizzling, and then How I'm Feeling with Snow the Product is coming, you know what I'm saying, after that, you know what I'm sizzling.
We're supposed to interview her soon too.
Oh man, that's my nigga, man. And you know, I'm just trying to really take it as far as I can these next 4 years.
Amazing. It's
been far already. I've been on the fucking Forbes list 4 times in a row. It's about to be 5, 6, 7.
It's motivation, man.
Yeah.
So much respect. Tech N9ne, thank you so much, man.
Thank you, brother.
Appreciate you. This has been No Jumper, the coolest podcast in the world. Check us out on YouTube, SoundCloud, iTunes. Peace.
No Jumper, Tech N9ne. On some shit. I'm